but not become in debt to the people that are giving them to us. And it's a fine line to walk, you know. And the more money that we put in the basket, the less we have to be dependent on looking for the price break on the outside. We will do what we can with what we got. And if we ain't got enough, we'll go out and try to get it on a better deal so we can fulfill our primary purpose. But there's a fine line in there that we have to learn how to walk, that we don't become dependent on some outside enterprise. Narcotics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. The role of the special worker, well, non-professional, I'll deal with that. There are people who have JLBs in the outside world that are just that. They are JLBs in the outside world, and that's where they need to remain. They don't need to be in the meeting rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. You need to listen to me because I'm a doctor and I need to tell you what to do. You need to listen to me because I'm a lawyer and I need to tell you what to do. You need to listen to me because my JOB is specialized in the particular area that you're having a problem in, and you should listen to me because I'm a professional. As we sit in these rooms to carry the message, to fulfill our primary purpose, we are one addict across the table from another addict, and that's all we are. What we are in our JOBs has got nothing to do with what we are in our recovery. You know, my job is enhanced because of my recovery. My recovery is not a part of my job. My recovery is a part of my job, but my job's not a part of my recovery. Yeah, maybe that's right. So I need to remember that. And when I know that I'm doing what I need to do, I'm able to talk for a period of time and people don't know how I make my living. That's when I know that I'm in recovery. Because I used to be what I was. I used to be my JOB, and that's all I was. And I helping other people validated me and made me a whole person. And when I had to give up that suit of armor that I hid behind, that JOB that I hid behind, I was a scared little kid. And you all have taught me how to grow in this program, that I didn't need that particular JOB to be me. You know, it's a part of me. I'm not a part of it. So when we're talking about non-professional, we talk about coming in these rooms and being a part of this program as addicts and addicts only, and leave the JOBs at the door. But there are people in this program who do the work so that our primary purpose, back in five, can be fulfilled to carry the message. Those are the people that work at the World Service Office. Those are the people that work at the Regional Service Office and the Area Service Office. Those are the people that whose JOB is involved with Narcotics Anonymous. But when they, 5 o'clock rolls around, and they leave their JOB, they should not be treated as second-class citizens when they come in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous looking for recovery. And so many times that happens. So many times that happens. People tend to give less credibility to people who are special workers because, yeah, I pay your salary, you know, and that's such crap. Yeah. Whether or not, see, once I put the dollar in the basket and ain't my dollar anymore, it belongs to Narcotics Anonymous. And Narcotics Anonymous pays that person's salary at whatever level they serve through their job as special workers. But when they leave that job, they got just as many rights, just as much credibility, and just as much responsibility for their own recovery as any other addict in this room who has a job on the outside. So special workers are just that. They're special. They are willing to not only earn their living through a job that is sometimes thankless, they are willing to put up with the possibility that some areas, regions, or other people treat them as second-class citizens or second-class addicts, and they're not. They're the people that help further carry the message. Not only do they have to practice the principles of recovery in their own life, all 24 of them, but they have to deal with addicts sometimes at their worst. I wrote a letter to WSO and they didn't answer me, you know, in a loving manner, you know, in a loving manner saying, hey, you know, we screwed up, you know, we're human. The problem will be rectified. So if each one of you is going to get something out of this deal, you know, each one of you is going to get something out of this deal. If one thing you get out of this is love your special workers. You know, I hope you get that. Because I've been associated with one in Dallas at the regional service office, and I've watched the way some people treat her, you know. And she's got a great program, and she's hardworking, and she's involved in NA service. But she gets looked at strangely and talked to strangely sometimes. Nine, NA as such ought never to be organized, but we create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. I had an experience with this particular tradition in action in somewhere on the eastern coast. They had a member of a World Service Board in attendance at a conference agenda report review, and somebody got up and asked a question and said, and the person declined to answer that question because that was privileged information, the salaries of people at the World Service Office. And that person said, "I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous. You are directly responsible to me, and you have to answer that question." And my sponsor stood up and said, "Let me suggest to you that the tradition says they are directly responsible to those they serve. The board is directly responsible to the World Service Conference, not to the individual addict. If a board of directors is created in the regional level, in my region, they are responsible to the regional service conference that created it." That is where the lines of authority go. Now, the lines of communication, the lines of responsibility. I'm responsible to my region as a regional service representative. I will become involved with areas, and I will take part in groups, but when I am serving in my role as a trusted servant, I am a servant of the region. And the region put me where I was. They have a right to remove me if they don't approve of my behavior. And if you disagree with my behavior as an individual addict, you go to your group, and you tell your group, your GSR, that the RSR is screwing up. And if the group conscience is the RSR is screwing up, they go to the area. And the area talks about it and has a group conscience and decides by group conscience the RSR is screwing up, and they go to the region and they bring a motion to impeach. And that's the way it goes. Because if I have to answer to all 15,000 groups individually as the chair of the World Service Conference, I will never get anything done. I'm responsible as a world-level trusted servant. I'm responsible to WSC. As a regional-level trusted servant, I'm responsible to the region. As an area trusted servant, I'm responsible to the area. And as a GSR, I'm responsible to my group. And that's the lines of communication in Narcotics Anonymous. And it works real well as long as we get out of the way and let it work. Narcotics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the NA name ought to be never be drawn in public controversy. This is consistent with what Mike read about no full-face photos, no identification by full name. You know, as an addict, I have an ego, and I want to go and be known as the spokesperson for Narcotics Anonymous, and I have to learn that that's not my job. Narcotics Anonymous speaks for itself through its traditions. This tradition keeps me from my ego, for me to go out and say, "Hi, I'm you know, 80 billion years clean, I've got more clean time than God, and I did it through Narcotics Anonymous, and here's a full face photo and with my numbers underneath it," you know. And just as sure as I do that, I'm gonna relapse the next day. You know. Just as sure as I do that, I'm gonna bring some trash on the name of Narcotics Anonymous. I work well as an individual rather than identified as a leader to the outside world. I work well as a trusted servant to the people who have trusted me with the position of leadership in Narcotics Anonymous. But where I put my needs, my wants, and my egos ahead of what's best for Narcotics Anonymous, I'm in violation of the 10th tradition. I begin to have opinions on outside issues. I begin to have opinions on who should be president and who should be on the Supreme Court and who should be this. And I tend to say those opinions because I'm an addict and I'm still a scared little kid. You know, I will say that's not the opinions of Tim B, but this is the opinion of Narcotics Anonymous, because I want you all backing me up, because I'm scared that my opinion has no validity. And I want to draw on that great formless, faceless mass of addicts that are out there and say, I speak for 300,000 recovering addicts when I speak. Oh, man, he must be tough, you know. But that's why this tradition exists, because I don't speak for Narcotics Anonymous. Never have. Praise God. Never will. That's my goal. I speak for me. You know, when I speak for me, then I can do the things necessary to change the things that I did yesterday. If I'm speaking for all of you, I've got to go to each one of you individually and say, hey, what do you want me to say? And then I won't listen to you anyway. You know? What I need to do is to learn how to share where I am today and not bring NA into public controversy by trying to represent Narcotics Anonymous. Each one of us has a job to do. Each one of us has a need to fulfill. Each one of us has a duty and a responsibility to be a part of, to take place and to live up to. All of us together are Narcotics Anonymous. No one individual is Narcotics Anonymous. And I hope that it will always be that way. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. Again, the last two, as well as the four preceding it, are ways we can screw up the delivery of our primary purpose to carry the message. If you're on a PI committee, you know this, and if you're not, let me share it with you. PI, when it makes a decision to carry the message to the non-addict who has a unique ability to get in touch with the addict that still suffers that we would not reach by conventional means, they go through the previous 10 traditions before they arrive at the 11th tradition to determine whether or not what they're doing is attraction rather than promotion. They have to make sure that as an area, when they put on a PI learning day, that it doesn't affect the other areas surrounding it. If you're going to put a public service announcement on TV in Dallas, you need to know that you affect East Texas, Heart of Texas, which is Waco, Denton, which is North Texas area, and the Fort Worth area. You affect four other areas with what you're doing, and if they're not prepared for the influx of phone calls that are going to be coming in on the helpline, you've done damage to Narcotics Anonymous unbelievably. By acting, when I say you, I'm talking about that public information committee has done damage by not considering the effects on other areas and other groups. So what they do is they go through each tradition to see whether the project they have in mind is consistent with the spiritual principle behind each one of those traditions, 1 through 10. And if it is, then they make the decision of whether it's attraction rather than promotion, and they go ahead with it. So when we're looking to be attractive, you know, I used to run around trying to gather people. I used to try to promote this program, and I found out that I, just like I did when I was crazed about NA language, I was promoting NA language, you know, and I had somebody tell me, I was not going to introduce a girl for her fourth birthday that I had 12-stepped, that as it was a client of mine that I talked to that I 12-stepped, and then she ended up in this program, and I'd introduced her for 1, 2, and 3, and she's real special to me, a real close friend of mine, but she was going to another fellowship, AA, as well as NA, and I wasn't going to introduce her. You know, I was that crazed. And I talked to, became willing to talk to somebody about it, try to get hold of my sponsor, and he wasn't there. And my ex-wife had been bitten by a rattlesnake, and I visited her in the hospital and mentioned it. And she said, you know, you got to lighten up. You got to let this deal go. You got to slow down and quit demanding that things be a certain way. And I thought, well, what the hell does she know? If she knew anything, she'd still be married to me. So I went back home, and I got a call, and a friend of mine, and he said, you got to lighten up. You got to let this deal go. You know, I have seen people in this fellowship in Dallas who have changed the way they talk and their language directly as a result of your example rather than you're beating them over the head with it. and I've seen people go just the opposite way as a result of your throwing it in their face and grabbing them by their shirts. He said, you got to lighten up. You got to let go. And I thought, well, he doesn't know much. He said some nice things about me, so he might be a little smarter than my ex-wife. Then my sponsor called me and said, you know, you got to lighten up. You got to let go. So we have a saying in Texas. If one person says you're a horse, smile. If two people say you're a horse, giggle. If three people say you're a horse, saddle up, motherfucker. So I put on the saddle, and I went to the meeting, and I made my amends to the group that I'd gone in and kicked shins and stepped on toes. And I didn't have to carry that burden to be the savior of Narcotics Anonymous from that day forward. I did not have to exert my will over it. I learned how to be attractive in my program instead of demanding and promoting. That's part of the spiritual recovery that comes from the traditions. See, the traditions also involve not only service, but personal recovery for me as a recovering addict. They're part of 24 spiritual principles. And each one of them have an individual application to my life, as well as having an application to the groups that they are supposed to be talking about, you know, back in the common welfare for our group purposes. For my individual purpose, there's but one all of an authority, you know. If I learn how to read these as a step, you know, as part of my life and my recovery, then my horizons of recovery are so greatly enhanced that I can't even comprehend it. But while I'm doing, the people in the Public Relations Committee and other committees that are dealing with the public, H&I and all those other people, have to remember that we speak as a member of Narcotics Anonymous and not for Narcotics Anonymous. Those are the five ways that we can screw up tradition number five, that we can forget our primary purpose, and instead of walking the path of carrying the message to the addict that still suffers, we start taking these side roads into the public forays and personal aggrandizement and needs to have our egos satisfied. You know, and if we live these traditions, if I learn how to live these traditions in my life, I stay on the road. I remember I have but one primary purpose, to carry the message to the addict that still suffers. And I don't have to go off on all these things, because I'll just have to come back and make some amends and do humble myself and all that shit, which I hate. What the concept that I've learned is, if I don't do the things that I have to say I'm sorry for, I won't have to say I'm sorry. That's way too confusing to me at times, but I've learned that if I don't step over here, I don't have to apologize for not stepping over there. When I know I'm supposed to be over there and I end up over here, better to not do it and not have to make amends than to do it and have to make amends, because I know I'm going to have to make them. This is number 12 is the one that gets chanted and screamed and hollered, and it took me about 4.5 years before I understood what this tradition is about. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. What that means is that I, as an addict, have no more voice or no less voice than any other addict in this room. It's not that I have to love you even though that I hate you. Principles before personality. That's not it. There are a couple of ways to look at that. If I am voting or I'm talking on a matter in group conscience, am I talking because it is my conscience, that's the principle, or am I talking because you who talked before me stepped on something that I hold dear and I'm talking out of reaction to you, that's the personality. If I'm voting to elect somebody to a position, am I voting for somebody or am I voting against somebody? What I'm trying to learn how to do is to say what I need to say without worrying about whether I'm going to be accepted because I say it. To say what's in my heart. To say what lives inside of me, what this program has given me. To be able to express it without fear or favor. If I'm doing that, then I'm placing principles before personalities. If I'm looking around the room to see who's nodding and who's reacting to what I'm saying, and I start altering what I say because I don't like the looks that some people are giving me, I'm placing personalities before principles. And as such, I do not have to defer to anybody in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous because they got more money than I got, because they're better looking than I am, because they got more education than I got. I don't have to defer to them for any other reason, any reason other than the respect that gives them the right to say what they got to say. And once they've said it, I got the right to say what my heart tells me to say. And I shouldn't give somebody 2 votes because they're a doctor, 3 votes because they're a lawyer, 4 votes because they're in a treatment counselor. Each one of us has a right to express what we need to express. And once it is expressed, to accept group conscience and to go on and do the things necessary to implement the conscience of the group, even though I don't agree with it. I can't sit there and throw rocks anymore because you haven't done what I know is best. I'm allowing my own personality to override the principle. The principle that for our group purpose there is but one loving authority. A loving God as he may express himself. Our leaders are trusted servants, they do not cover. I do not have the right as an individual addict to do more than speak my peace, but I have no less right. I have no less right than to speak what I feel. And when I give it up because I'm overwhelmed by you or humbled by you or don't like you and say things that are not consistent with my own personal recovery out of a reaction and fear and anger, I am violating the 12th tradition. I am in total violation of the 12th tradition. The principle is the principle of recovery. The principle is the principle of love and understanding and acceptance. And if I will place those principles, which are consistent with selflessness, before my reaction to other people in this program, I will consistently make decisions that are in harmony with a loving God that has an understanding. Where I want to place what my needs and my wants ahead of the principles that are available in this program, I will not be in harmony with this tradition, and I will suffer. I will pay for it. Not you all, me, because I'm the one that violated it. There's a line in the basic recovery text that says, if a solution isn't spiritual, it isn't practical, if it isn't practical, it isn't spiritual. Spiritual principles cannot conflict. People conflict. Spiritual principles do not. For two people are in harmony with the spiritual principles and the 24 steps and traditions of this program, there is no conflict. And never will be, and never has been. The conflict arises when people set aside spiritual principles for their own selfish purposes. They occur when I was using the traditions as a club to get what I wanted, that I knew was best for Narcotics Anonymous, and I was the local guru. I'm in conflict with my own God when I do that. The traditions have provided me a whole limitless, boundless area for recovery, just as the steps provided me. But they're not traditions over here and steps over here. The traditions come together with the steps and provide me a way to walk evenly on the road to recovery. And that's all they do. And as long as I apply the traditions in my personal life as a means and a tool of recovery, I will grow. Where I believe that they serve no purpose other than to govern people and to keep people in line, I will limit my growth. I want to be the best possible me I can be today. That's what this program has given me. You've given me me. And when I want the best that's available, I'll use them all. And when I want to limit myself, I won't use them all. I'm real grateful that Melissa called. This was kind of an ego deal. This hidden, but the other one was. I had submitted a tape to Chicagoland Convention, and Melissa called right after I sent the tape off, and she said, would you come and do a workshop on traditions? And I said, well, gee, darling, I'd love to, but I'm going to be some kind of highfalutin speaker in Chicago. But if that doesn't work out, I'll drop by. Ron, oh, listen, there's more to the story. Don't ever shut it down. Ron from Chicago called and said, he said, I don't know what happened. He said, there were four of us on the committee. We each had a tape we liked. We decided nobody would give up and vote for one of the other ones, so we put them all four in a can, and we drew them out one by one, and yours was the one left in the can. I said, God wants me to go to Albuquerque because there's something there I can learn. See, if I'd have been in Chicago, I wouldn't have got to reaffirm my relationship and my commitment with the guys from El Paso. You know, and it's always so warm for me to see them, to remind me, to get me in touch with where I am and where I came from. And they've seen me grow. You know, they saw me do the first relationship workshop in Denver and when I was insane in 1986. You know, and that's how I find out how I've grown. You know, for them to come to me and say, hey, you were better than you were. You know, so, and I get to see some other loving friends of mine, you know, and to hang out before engaging in the potential insanity that awaits in Van Nuys, California. Potential. It doesn't have to be insane. You know, I'm the one that makes it. So being a part of the first New Mexico Regional Convention is going to be a special memory in my life. And I wish you all the best. You all had to work hard and really had to do a hell of a job putting this thing on. And I congratulate you. You're doing great. Thank you for asking me.
My name is Mike, and I'm an addict. Boy, that was great, Tim. I really got a lot out of it. Fantastic. I'd like to thank our speaker for sharing and for attending. As for Buzz, I hope he's starting to feel better right now. He really missed out on something good here. Would you please join me in closing this meeting with the Lord's Prayer?
Please keep Jonathan in mind.